A listener production.
Please leave your message after the tone.
Why am I jealous of my ex?
I am so stressed all the time.
How do I get into a routine?
Is TikTok making me anxious?
I think I'm being manipulated.
Someone told me you could live with half a brain.
This is Do You Fucking Mind? Mindset Hacks for a Badass Life, hosted by me, Alexis Fernandez.
Welcome to the podcast, my beautiful beans. I am really, really, really excited for this episode today because I have Matthew Hussey on this episode. And if you guys haven't already heard of him, he is a life coach, he's a YouTuber, he's an expert in love life advice, and he's also the author of the book Get the Guy, which I'm going to get Matthew to actually talk about his book a little bit more because I'm very excited about this. But I think that he probably gives the best advice on how to date, how to read people better in dating, how to become confident in your decisions. The way he delivers content is on point, but he's also really caring as well. I'm just really excited for this episode. Welcome, Matthew, to the show.
Hi, Alexis. I'm really excited to be here. I like that our paths have intersected long before this podcast. I'm eager to hear how.
Yeah. So I actually have loved your content for a very long time, well before I started my podcast. And it was, I found your content when I was going through a breakup. This is in 2019. And I was just like, this is brilliant. I love how he delivers it. It's so real. You have the ability to make people feel more empowered, but also I just felt like I had a bit more control of my situation. I was in like the depths of my despair. And I was just, you know, when you're just like going nuts searching for an answer, and I was like researching, just going crazy. And
I do
really
know that
resonated
feeling
with your stuff.
I know that feeling exactly.
And honestly, after I started my podcast, you were on my list of like, you know, like goal guests to have. Oh. So this is really cool.
I'm so happy I have that context. That's so nice to know. And it's also, I'm really glad that what I do was there for you in such a dark time, because I remember when I've been in those moments myself, I remember the things that helped me climb out. And I think it creates a special bond. The people and the influences that get you through in those times, you always have a really special bond with those things. And that part of what I do excites me as much, if not more, as like someone who says to me, I met the love of my life because of your work. The person who comes to me and says, you were there for me when I was like rock bottom and didn't know how to crawl out of bed. To me, that's some of the most meaningful stuff, because I've had some really painful moments in my life, and we need that stuff when we're in those places.
I've got so many questions. I actually put the call out to my listeners and they have bombarded me with questions. So excited that you're on the show. But before that, could you, definitely please talk about your book, because I want everyone reading it. But also, I want to know, what made you start doing what you are doing? Why are you so good at it?
I just wrote a brand new book that I'm tremendously excited for everyone to read. It's called Love Life: How to Raise Your Standards, Find Your Person, and Live Happily No Matter What. And it's funny, you mentioned my original book, Get the Guy, which was 10 years ago now, which blows my mind. And
10 years. Oh, 10 my God. Years.
Yeah, it's crazy. I literally, this came out almost just after the 10-year anniversary of that original book. And so much has changed in my life in that time. So much has changed about what I know throughout that decade of my life. It's been a hugely influential decade of my life. And I've poured everything that I know into this book. And, you know, what started me was really my own journey of trying to figure out how to be more outgoing when I was a teenager. I mean, it dates all the way back to me being this shy and introverted kid. I'm still introverted, but I'm a little less shy and a little more able to handle social situations and talking to people. But I was shy, I was introverted, I was terrified of embarrassment as a child and as a teenager, and probably as all teenagers are. But I remember just being so afraid of looking foolish and talking to people that I liked. I could never talk to the person I liked, you know, and
same. Oh my God, it's embarrassing.
Yeah. And I remember having this moment of thinking, God, if I don't learn how to do this, I'm going to spend my whole life being chosen instead of doing the choosing, instead of actually being able to go and talk to someone that I really am curious about. And so much of what I learned, you know, I was 11 years old when I first picked up How to Win Friends and Influence People off of my dad's bookshelf of all places. And he was into self-development. And so I picked up that book, and that was like a revelation to me that you could learn things that would allow you to have more of an impact in the world and with other people. That was just it was like a light bulb moment for me. I didn't realize, by the way, when I picked it up, that I had picked up a book that had been read by many, many, you know, millions of people. I just thought I'd discovered this secret scroll that no one else knew about.
I love that.
Yeah, no, it's so funny. I thought no one knows about this. This is like, these are superpowers I'm learning with people. That sent me on this whole path of, you know, trying to understand people better, trying to understand how I could relate better to people, how I could have more of an impact. And then when I got to 19, which is a crazy age to even think of starting something like this, I started to talk about what I was learning to other people. And I wasn't solving anyone's deep trauma. I wasn't resolving people's, you know, deeper issues, but I did know, because I did it for myself, how to get people out of themselves, out of their shells, and to start being braver in the ways that I had learned to be braver, and how to bring out more of themselves socially. And at first, that was really valuable. It was like I became kind of known for helping people do that. And that was useful, especially when I started working with women, because so many women I've met were holding back and waiting for other people to make the move, and kind of almost their whole love life was predicated on someone else being brave first, so that they could then get into a relationship with someone. And what was evident to me was you can't go through life like that, because if you do, you're in danger of only ever meeting the loudest guy in the room. And that guy's not necessarily the best guy. There are plenty of great guys who aren't in the habit of running up to every woman they see. So what I started doing in the beginning was helping women to go out and be able to make that move. And then, of course, my idea, by the way, with that, Alexis, was that my theory was that if I could get women to make the move more, they would have more options. And if they would have more options, then they would make better choices about who to give their time and energy to, instead of giving it to someone who disrespected them or was abusive or was just non-committal. And I was only partly right in that theory. I was also quite wrong in that theory, because it did empower people to suddenly have these tools to be able to go and create more opportunity in their love life. And that was what my original book, Get the Guy, was all about. But, you know, since then, what I realized was, oh, people, even when they have choices, still make really bad choices.
Yeah.
And why is that? Why is it they keep going for these people that hurt them, that don't meet their needs, that treat them like they're disposable, that don't invest in them? What is going on here that we keep gravitating, me included, to people that don't make us happy? And that was really the beginning of a very serious process in my both professional life and my private life over the next few years of trying to figure this out, which led to this new book, Love Life, which is designed to help people understand what's really going on with us in the world that is making it really hard for us to find the love that we say we want.
I have so many listeners who talk about the love that they would like to have, but when they talk about what they're seeking, what they find exciting, or what's like what draws them, they're two completely different things. And then, you know, like, they like the excitement, they want the adrenaline, they want the butterflies, they want this roller coaster of emotions, and half, if not more than half the time, that is a red flag. And so I say to people, you know, you've got to also look beyond the initial dating phase, because you could potentially be cutting out these like absolute golden people in your life because you're expecting this really exciting encounter day one. And if it's not there, then it's not the one. And so they've got this idea of the perfect person in their head, but they also have to be the most exciting person then and there when they meet them. So I think that's where a lot of people really struggle.
Yeah, no, what we need and what our brain is telling us we want can be very different things. And we often don't question where these urges are coming from. We just follow them because it feels right. If I feel this intensely about someone, then that must be worth following. And that doesn't always track. For a long time, I boxed. And I remember my coach, Martin Snow, saying to me at one point in the ring, "Your instincts will get you killed." He said,
"Interesting.
When a punch is being thrown at you, the instinct is to blink. It's not to slip or to parry or to step back.
Yeah.
It's to flinch and blink. And that instinct is the exact opposite of what will help you in that moment. You need your eyes to see, and we blink. In a, you know, he talked about in a riptide. In a riptide, we get pulled out into the ocean, and the instinct is to swim back to the shore as quickly as possible. But the current is so powerful that you might drown if you do that. We have to do what's against our instinct, which is to swim sideways so that we're parallel. And so we're actually taking a longer route to then come back on ourselves towards the shore, which in that moment, our instinct tells us just get back to land, but we have to train a different instinct. And so we're taught a lot in our love life to trust our instincts. And that can be a dangerous thing. I think we have to question our instincts a little more. Intuition is a different thing. Like our intuition might pick up on something that's wrong, but our instinct might be that when someone pulls away, we text them twice as much. When someone pulls away, we invest even more.
Because we feel it. We feel like we have to. So I feel like I have to. So I'm just going to like honor that and just self-sabotage.
Well, like, we might be, someone pulling away might immediately make them more valuable to us. That's a bad instinct. Is someone pulls away, I think they're more valuable. Now, why do we think they're more valuable? Because they feel more scarce. Because we associate rarity with value. A lot of us have been at an early age made to feel like we have to earn love. And so the moment someone pulls away and we feel like, oh, we're in a place of having to earn their attention, then it feels like, it feels familiar to us. This feels like love. Oh, this is what I remember love to be. It's and of course, we don't think this consciously, but our body recognizes this push-pull feeling as something we know. And so we don't gravitate towards what makes us happy. We gravitate towards what's familiar. So people then, they go towards something and they don't know why. They just go, I just feel so much with this person. But we don't necessarily question, what is this feeling? What is this thing I'm calling chemistry? Because maybe it's anxiety. Maybe it's this person makes me feel unsafe. This person makes me question my value. And when they text me after questioning my value, it feels euphoric to get a text from that person. And when I feel euphoric, I associate that with chemistry and, oh, this, I just feel really special. You know, this is a really special feeling I have. Look how intense it is. But it's a complete misnomer as to the true value of this person or this relationship. So we have to start looking at not what's comfortable and not just what feels really intense, but what is it I need in order to be happy. And that can be much more subtle than the very shiny things that make us feel very drawn to someone in the first place. What I've been saying to people is, and I talk about this in the book, we have to start by saying, when I had a really, let's say, exciting relationship, right? What was missing that made me feel miserable? What was missing that made me feel like I couldn't sleep properly. I was anxious all the time. I felt unhappy. I didn't feel good enough. What was missing? And it could be that what was missing was consistency. It could be that what was missing was loyalty from that person. It could be I didn't feel seen. It could be I couldn't be myself. Or that that person was never really, they never really chose me. And when you know what was missing.
Yeah, well, that's exactly for me with that major breakup that I was in the depth of my despair. It was very much one of those roller coaster relationships where you fall so hard and it's really, it's an actual anxiety, not butterflies. It's like you just, when things are, you know, that whole thing of when the highs are high, the highs are the best, but the lows are really bad. It's like, that's obviously such a warning sign, but we don't really listen to that. But yeah, I was looking at a lot of your content, and when I would think back at what was missing so much, I was a shell of my former self. So many of my friendships had just fizzled out because I was isolating myself. It was a very, very unhealthy relationship. And the only thing that was good was when the few times he was like really nice and really great, but most of the time it was a very emotionally abusive relationship. And I had lost my sense of self. I couldn't make decisions boldly for myself without always factoring him into everything. I had not much that, like, so much was missing. And now I look at my relationship now and I'm like, I am the best version of myself, the best version. And there were no butterflies at the start. It was so calm and relaxing. There was no highs and lows. It was just a really calm start of a relationship. And I think because I was so used to the highs and lows, I was thinking, this is so different. It's probably a really good thing.
Let me ask you this, Alexis. What do you, having had that experience and now being in this relationship that feels infinitely more peaceful than that one, what do you tell people who ask you, well, does, you know, if you didn't feel the chemistry in the beginning, or if you didn't feel the butterflies, maybe you felt chemistry, but not butterflies. But how do you help people to go, you know, it's okay, don't worry. I didn't sacrifice attraction, or I didn't suddenly say that attraction was no longer important to me. Because a lot of people feel like when they choose a more peaceful relationship, they're having to opt out of having attraction. So what do you tell people about your relationship right now to reassure them about that?
Yeah, because that is actually a really common question that people do ask. And for me, I said, it's not that I would still look for signs like, would I get excited to see him? Of course I'd get excited to see him. But it wasn't this like anxiety, because every time I'd text him, he'd message back. He was, I like you, I'm interested. When can I see you? He wasn't overbearing, but he was just so emotionally available. It was so strange to me. But what I did focus on was when we were together, we had such a good time. And one thing that I noticed, which never existed before, is no one ever made me feel more comfortable in my own skin when I was around them as far as dating. I had never had a first date where I was not second guessing what I would say, trying to impress them. I didn't feel like I had to impress. I could just be. And it felt, I'd never felt that before. It felt such a deep sense of comfort in myself. I felt really free. And because of that, we had great banter. There was so much that we could laugh about. We could be spontaneous with each other. But then when we'd leave the date, he would straight away send the message saying, that was such a nice time. Can we do this again, like tomorrow? Or he wore his heart on his sleeve and he was just very transparent that he liked me. And at first I was like, he's really like so open about this. But then I realized it's like, this is what normal, healthy, well, not maybe not normal, but a healthy, healthy relationship is like.
How did you learn that? Like, what was the, because I'm so curious. So many people feel that discomfort and they, because it feels unfamiliar and it might even feel boring at first because you're kind of like, this doesn't give me that familiar push-pull feeling. What did you do to sort of arrive at that place where you went, this is something I need to lean into as opposed to this is something that is boring and I'm going to keep searching for something more exciting?
Totally. So I think for me, what made me come to that realization was actually how I felt just before I had met him, because I'd had that really unhealthy relationship. Then I was single for about 2.5 years. I think I went on maybe 2 dates, if that. I was just like wildly single. But then I was jaded at the start, really jaded. Then I kind of, that went away. I healed. I was genuinely open to relationships again, but I wasn't searching for it. And one thing that I really valued was I realized I'd gotten to a point where I loved the life I'd finally created for myself. I had built myself back up. I was doing everything I wanted to be doing. I was so happy. So then I realized that what I valued the most moving forward is someone who would celebrate that, and who I could find someone who was independent but wanted to come together to form a, you know, a partnership. And I thought, based on everyone I had dated in the past, that that just wasn't going to be possible. So I thought, if I don't meet someone, I don't meet someone. I've really worked so hard to build my life up in the way that I've built it, that I'm at peace. I was so happy. I was really finally happy. And I think that when I met Tyrone, I thought, the thing that I was reminding myself of is like, it just comes across that he just wants to celebrate who I am as a person. He's not doing anything to change me. He's not trying to. So I think I was really starting to realize that everything that he had to offer aligned so well with what I valued in my life. And I thought this would be such a good match if it works. So I kind of just said, I'm going to drop my guard and just roll with it, because this seems like too good to be true. Let's just go for it, you know?
Was there at least the physical attraction there that allowed you to go? It's because a lot of people will be in those situations where they'll go, if I'm not attracted to this person, should I keep going anyway? Because it's like got stuff and they're treating me the right way and it feels healthy, or should I bail? A lot of people struggle with that, like, do I bail on people too soon? Should I keep going even though I don't feel attracted? What do you say to people?
Yeah, because I've got the exact question that someone's asked that I was going to ask you as well. But I personally say to people, I'd love to hear your take on this as well. But for me, yes, there was definitely the attraction. I was attracted to him. I loved our conversation. I wanted to see him again. It wasn't this like, oh, he's good on paper, but I just don't feel it. Like, I definitely was like, this guy's amazing. But because of his emotional availability, there was no anxiety, no highs and lows, but it was just great, you know? So I think when people say, so I'll actually read the question that they said, because it was really, really good. Where is it? Okay. Someone wrote in, how do you know when someone is the one? I feel I end things so fast with people because I don't feel a special spark, but wonder if I cut things off too early with people and should have waited it out. I also don't want to waste time with people that I don't think are right for me. And I think this is really common.
I don't think anyone who meets me on day one has any real bearing on what is actually special about me. And I think that's true for everybody. When I think of friendships I've had, the friends that have lasted the longest with me don't tend to be the people that the day I met them, I came home and went, oh my God, I just met the most incredible guy. Like, he was, my God, he was just so cool. And it was this, and that was like, it doesn't, normally that's like the person who charmed me the most on the day that we met. The amount to which someone charmed me and made me like go home excited about my new best friend, it really had no bearing on how long we would be friends for. And there are plenty of other people in my life that when I met them, I just felt like I'd met this good human being, interesting. I was like, oh, I enjoy being in their presence. But I didn't feel that sense of like, we need to be best friends. I was just like, I feel really at home with this person. And I think that's a very different feeling, but it's not as extreme. And I think what we have to be careful of is measuring what could be in a relationship by the intensity of the feeling on day one, partly because some of the most dangerous people in life are the ones that are very intentional about creating the biggest spikes in feelings in the beginning. You know, there are people that really know how to make an impact. They know how to listen to you in a way that makes you feel like you're the most interesting person in the room. They know the right questions to ask you. It doesn't necessarily mean they're bad people, but it's like a kind of beam of light that they know how to turn on. And then the moment you're out of sight, they know how to turn it on with the next person. And that might not make it evil, but it also means that what you were feeling wasn't really about you. Mm. And it wasn't really about the connection the two of you had either. It was more about how great this person is at turning on that full beam.
Yeah.
And so the opposite, I believe, is also true, that some of the best people in life, you don't know what makes them so great until you spend a little time with them and you start to see their character. And their character can be, I think my wife is sexy as hell and gorgeous and all of the things, but I can tell you right now, the best part about her is her character.
Mm.
Her values and her character, those are the things that separate her from other people. The way that she responds to situations, the way she showed up in my life, in the tough times, the way that she saw me, that only became evident over time, like that is the stuff that made me marry this person. It wasn't like I just found the hottest woman I could find and then married her. Like I was it.
And you wouldn't have known that the first couple of dates. Like there was no way you would have had that insight.
You don't
into
know
her
a
character.
Person in the first couple of dates. Like we flatter ourselves with being such a great judge of character and think that we're so good at reading people but anyone who's ever had a company knows that you get real humble real fast when you hire people, because you can think someone's amazing in an interview and then 6 months later you're like, this is never going to work. Like, this is the worst hire I've made. You can feel that. And in the day one, you were like, this person's going to be a rock star. Like you can get it so wrong. And I stopped saying I'm such a great judge of character because I got it wrong enough times that I'm like, honestly, I don't know. Instead, I take a we'll see approach to people where I meet someone, I like them, I had a great time with them, and I'm like, we'll see. That has served me much better than making up my mind about people in some really fast way. And also, character can't be measured on a date. Character can only be measured over time, because character is consistent in different situations. So you can't see character until you see someone in different situations. And
yeah, that's so true.
And the more you get curious about someone and the more you can be genuinely curious about them and what's made them them, where they came from, why they are the way they are, what they've been through, you start to get much more context for who someone is. And I don't know about you, Alexis, but for me, I've always found that the more context I have for who someone is, the more I start to appreciate that person. I get them. I get what they've been. I'm like, wow, I didn't know you'd been through that. Oh my God. Yeah, like you're amazing. How are you not someone who's like smashing up buildings? Like how have you been through that? And you're who you are. You are a marvel. Like the more I know about people, the more I just get, I find people amazing. And you can't know that on a date. So I think we have to be really careful about how quickly we write people off. It's different if someone is disrespectful or rude or, you know, show up halfway through a date and don't apologize. Or like when you see genuine like red flags that someone is an energy you don't want to be around, that's different. But I think we're expecting the world to make us feel something instead of going into the world with this sort of passionate lens about life and about people that makes everything feel better. You can walk into a garden and be someone who says, I'm so hot and I'm just, oh God, I just need to like, I need a drink. Or you can walk into a garden and be like, oh my God, look at these flowers. Look at these plants. Look at these. You're in the same garden, but one person has a true appreciation for what's around them and another person doesn't care. That applies to people too. I think sometimes we're expecting someone to come into a room and make us feel something because we don't feel it ourselves. We're not we're not connected in life. We're not connected to how amazing people are. We're not connected to how attractive people are. I think people are so attractive. I think there's so many attractive people in life.
Yeah.
I don't think that we struggle for there being attractive people around. When someone says to me, I'm never attracted to anyone, I'm like, really? Like, go outside. Attractive people everywhere. And I don't just mean physically. I just mean like when you really start to appreciate people, there's just so many gorgeous human beings around. How can you not find people attractive? So I think we have to start. If we keep saying we're never attracted to anyone, we have to start looking at ourselves and saying, what's going on with me that I never find anyone attractive? Either when I look at people, I'm seeing right past them and I'm not really taking them in and appreciating them, or, you know, I'm spending my life going for people that are really, I don't mean this in a positive sense. Like, we go for people that make us feel really safe because they never challenge us. We get bored of that because we want to be challenged, but we're actually deeply afraid to be rejected by someone who might challenge us. So I think sometimes we keep going for safe in that way, in a negative sense as well.
But it's also kind of like what you said at the start of the episode about waiting to be chosen instead of going out to choose. I think a lot of people, like you said, like, we meet this person, we're not instantly blown away. We're expecting them to do something. They don't even know what that is. You don't know what that is. You want to be blown away. It's not happening. Where instead, it's like, how interested are you in that person that's so-called boring? Like, what are your conversations like? What are the kinds of questions you're asking these people? Like, have you given yourself the opportunity for them to be interesting, you know?
There's a great moment in Rick and Morty where Rick is in front of this big audience of people that he doesn't respect, and they're all booing him. And he says, your boos mean nothing to me. I've seen what makes you cheer. And it's such an amazing line. And the reason I bring it up in this context is because those same people who say that they never get attracted are often the people that come to me at some point and tell me about a guy they can't get out of their mind or a woman they can't get out of their mind. And when you ask them what it is about that person, that they describe a person that is like, you want to say, this is what's got you excited, is that this person who stepped into your life and charmed you for 5 minutes, who now treats you like crap, is like, you know, you can't get them off your mind because of this moment that you had with them. And then when you describe them, they don't even sound like a nice person. They don't sound like a kind human being. They sound narcissistic. They sound full of themselves. They sound like, this is what's making you cheer. Then you have to start questioning what's making you boo, because you're booing things that I don't respect what you're cheering over here. And maybe you need to start not respecting as much what's making you cheer. And maybe you need to start suspecting what's making you cheer and recognizing that what you're booing over here, you're writing off without having any true appreciation or understanding of how good these people are, or how much they have to offer, or how interesting they are in much deeper ways than this person who's not interesting because, you know, they seem flashy and they haven't texted you back for 5 days.
So, okay. So this leads me into a question that was really, really common. And that is why. So people get into, they'll go for one date. It's the most exciting date of their life. They're like, this was unbelievable. The chemistry was phenomenal. And then they either get ghosted altogether, or this person is really difficult to like lock down for a second date. Even if they do get that second date, it's in a fortnight How do they get over this one encounter that they're like, obviously they don't know if this person's going to be the one, but they feel like this person is it, you know?
Everyone has to take ownership of what they value. What you value is that it doesn't just happen to you. We can choose what to value. People talk about this like their values just happen to them. Like, what I'm valuing is someone who was shiny. Maybe they were charismatic. there was something about them, the way they looked, their style, whatever, that they seemed successful. And, you know, they were very charming for the 2 hours I spent with them. We're deciding to value that. You can decide to value something else. You can decide that from now on in your life, you're going to value only people who are consistent in your life. You can decide that. Yeah. You can decide to value only people who you see as kind in the way that they are with people. You can decide to value only the relationships where they are reciprocal and you feel like someone is investing on the same level that you are prepared to invest. In the same way that in life in general, you can decide whether you value the most the person in the at the party with the most money and the most contacts, or the person that you have the best time with, the person that you have a great conversation with that can do nothing for you other than the fact that they're really enjoyable to be around. You can decide what to value. And what gets us in trouble is we never make those decisions consciously. So now you've got someone who is valuing this person who's charismatic and charming and they had a great moment of connection with, who's treating them poorly, who treats them as utterly dispensable, who never texts them, only texts them at the end of the night on a Saturday to say, where are you? We're choosing not to value consistency, kindness, true intimacy, someone who actually respects our time. We're choosing not to value those things. And so a huge amount of the answer to this is just making a very conscious decision about what you are going to value going forward. For me these days, it's not possible 100% of the time, but as much as I possibly can in life, I only want to have authentic interactions with people. Like I'm loving this podcast right now with you, Alexis, because it's real. Because it's an authentic, this is an authentic exchange.
Like a conversation.
I don't know you, but what I get at least from this conversation is you showed up to be real and authentic and have just a genuine conversation. I'm not talking to you where you're like somewhere else waiting for the next question and then you're just going to go and then you go. So tell me about you're actually with me. Like we're in this together. Yeah. Like we're having a great conversation and those are the conversations I want to have because that's what I value. If there was a podcast that was twice as big, but the person had like it, I just felt how fake it was and that there wasn't a gen, like I would never want to do that podcast again because it's just, I want to have authentic interactions with people in my life because that's what I value. We tend to value those things because we've experienced the opposite. We tell ourselves never again, I can't do this. Again, it makes me so unhappy to have inauthentic, fake exchanges that I just want to be the most authentic version of myself. And I want to be around people who want to meet me there. It's deciding what to value. And I think everyone can look back in their history and go, what was I undervaluing in the past? That by undervaluing it, I brought myself a tremendous amount of pain. And once you know what that is, that can instruct your future because you can say, you know what? No matter how charismatic or charming or sexy a person is, they do not command any of my time, my emotion, my intimacy, my life, unless they have that thing that I really value. And I never, ever give up that thing that I value because someone has oodles of these other things that feel really tantalizing and frankly feed my ego because that's what so much of what is driving us in our relationships is ego. This person, they look like someone I couldn't get in high school and now they're paying attention to me on this dating app and it's too irresistible. I have to try and get this person because I've always wanted to get this kind of person and I never felt like I could get them before, but now I feel like I am getting them. So let me try. And then that person gets to treat you like crap because you're coming to the table like someone who thinks they're above you or thinks that they're out of your league to begin with, or I'm going to get with this person because they're going to look great to my friends or my family. Or because when I introduced them to my friends all went, oh my God, they're so hot, or they're so this, they're so that.
Yeah.
And that felt good. It felt like validation to me. Never mind how they treat me in private or the fact that this relationship actually sucks on any meaningful level. My friends say they think he's really hot. There's so much of this. For so many of us, we're not being driven by what's going to make us happy. We're being driven by what we think is going to make us feel enough. And that's the part that has to change.
Do you think that that value thing can be applied to like a breakup? So someone's been in a relationship. I had someone say that it's been 4 years since the heartbreak and they feel they've made some progress, but they're just struggling. So how do you change your mentality when someone's left you? When you just were like, absolutely not. I thought this was the love of my life. I was so sure. How to then reframe, you know, I even had someone ask, like, it's been 1 year and I'm sure that they were my soulmate. Should I reach out or do I just push through?
So firstly, you were wrong.
Yeah.
You were wrong. They weren't. And
they were not your soulmate.
It's understanding that. And going again, your question was, can you apply this values tool essentially to post breakup? And the answer is absolutely you can. Because you have to decide in a breakup, what do I value? Do I value someone that I had a great time with 6 months ago? Or do I value someone who chooses me? Because surely the number one criteria for a relationship is that someone wants to have it with you.
Right.
That seems like an important thing. When we're talking, especially when we're talking about who our soulmate is, it seems like a necessary condition of a soulmate that they see us as the same, that they also think we're their soulmate, not that we are like soulmating at that person. Like,
it's so true.
We have to have a value that says, unrequited love is fucking bullshit. I'm not going to subscribe to this unrequited love nonsense. It's great for poetry, but it's not great for real life. Did you watch the show, Alexis? Did you watch the show One Day?
No, I haven't. I feel like I'm the only person that hasn't watched this.
I won't give any spoilers because your audience will hate me for it and you can go watch it. But I'll say this because it's not a spoiler and it's just part of the kind of, you know, the early story of it is just that there's two people who meet in college and the story follows them in their lives and the relationship that they have together that begins with this friendship. And will they, won't they? And, you know, that's what the story looks at over the course of, you know, the years. In the show, that is a very romantic notion, right? That there's these two people that are so deeply connected and will they or won't they get together? And they just belong together, surely. And I can't help, me and my wife watched the series and we loved it. Like we really, really enjoyed it. But I can't help knowing everything I know and doing the work that I've done for the last 17 years of my life, helping people find genuine happiness in their love lives and in their lives. I watch stories like that and I cringe at the lessons people will take from them. Because that idea of we may end up together, like this is my soulmate, if only they'd realize it. Those become the great unhatched eggs of our life. And we like coddle these eggs and we nurture them and we think about them and we replay the story of them and what they could be and what they should be in our mind. And that's what we do in a breakup when we think someone was our soulmate. We hold on to this, what we think of as an unhatched egg, like this amazing relationship that never was, that should be.
What could have been,
What could have been. And what I want to do is like smash those eggs open and show people there's nothing in there. There's nothing in there, but we don't want to do that because, and this is where it comes back to what you value. And this is where I'm going to give people a little more of a reality check because it's important because this is your life. And I don't know what anyone's beliefs are out there, but I don't think we get another go around at this, especially at least in this exact way. So this is your life. You're never going to be this age again. This decade of your life, you're never going to have this decade again. That's it. Once you're through this decade, it's gone. So this right now, this time that you're giving to this story means you're valuing a fantasy over your real life. This story can become a reason to never leave the house, to never go and be active and involved, to be an active participant in your own life, to go and live out a real story, which, by the way, will never live up to some silly fantasy of what something could have been, because real life doesn't live up to a romance novel. Real life is more interesting than that. It's actually better.
Yeah.
It's better. It's more interesting. It's more rich. It's more complex. It's more real. And you can either opt for a real life where you go out and confront the actual beauty and the disappointment of actual living and all of the good stuff that that involves in all different ways. Or you can hold on to this science fiction novel that you've written in your mind.
Yeah.
About this relationship that should have been. It's science fiction. It's not this, oh, if only if they were 5 years older, it would have been something because they would have been more ready. What? Listen to that.
Yeah.
It's a science fiction novel. Yep. If they were 5 years older, like if their parents had sex like 5 years earlier and somehow they were still the sperm that existed in a different time, even though that's not possible. Like what? What are we talking about here? This is a parallel universe you're talking about where this person decided that they were ready to commit 5 years sooner or that they did want kids after all. It's not reality. And by the way, after a heartbreak, remember this, the person that broke up with you a year ago, they're not anymore the person that broke up with you a year ago. They're a different version of themselves now, just as you are a year later. So even if you met again today, the two of you would be different people than you were a year ago. You would not be dating the same person again. You're dating a different person. That idea of, you know, what is it? No man stands in the same river twice because it's not the same man and it's not the same river. 10 years after you break up with someone or 1 year after you break up with someone, they're a different person at that point. What you're missing, it's not just a fantasy, it's a ghost, it's someone that's already gone. What I want people to take away from this is, and I know I'm ranting about this, but I think it's so important because this is people's actual time. Like this is your real time. Yeah. You don't get it back. So all this time you're sitting there thinking about this person, you are putting your actual life on hold. That's your actual life. And this fantasy will remain a fantasy, but your actual time, just that actual year, just left you.
There was one breakup, not the one I was mentioning, a different one a few years earlier. And it probably took me my life was probably on hold for about at least a year where I was in hope that he'd come back. And I can't move on yet because he'll come back.
Yep.
And I look back and I just mourn that year being like, if there's one thing that I would love to pass on is exactly that. It's like, you will never have this time again, ever again. And it's okay to mourn, but to wait and hope and to have these false ideas and these fantasies, like the realer you can be with yourself, it's the biggest favor you can do.
And by the way, not to get too philosophical, but that year, it's also science fiction to think that you could have got there sooner. Because a year was what it took for you. So that year was as long as you needed to finally say, you know what, I'm going to create a different story now. But what my hope is that by chance, someone ended up listening to you and me today. And that this is the right message at the right time, that instead of someone sitting there holding, nesting this unhatched egg for another year, this is the moment where they say, I'm going to now go and create a new story. That's my hope for this, is that we can get someone to that place sooner than they would if they'd never listened to this episode. Because sometimes the right person saying the right thing at the right time for us can take us on a different set of train tracks and completely change our life. That's one of the things I find most fascinating about life. You're listening to a random podcast and it changes the course of your life.
I'm loving this conversation. I feel like we're eventually going to need a round two of this because it's so rich with takeaways that the audience can really grab onto.
We got to do the round two in Sydney.
Yes. Oh my God, I'd love that. I would love that. Yes. Okay. So I've got a few questions. I mean, there's so many that came through, but I'm going to pick the ones that I think would be most in line with what we've been talking about. One thing that really came up a lot was how soon in dating should you, or is there a timeline of when you can have this exclusivity chat? People don't want to be stuck in a situationship. They want to know, like, when do I value myself enough to be like, okay, it's now or never. If I'm not sure of the answer, is there a too soon? Is there a timeline that I've got to wait?
Look, I don't think there's ever really a too soon to just talk about what you're excited about for yourself in life. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's a too soon to be in telling someone that that's your vision for you and them.
Yeah.
There's not too soon to be like, these are the things I'm excited about in my life. In the same way that you might talk about, I'm excited to build a company, or I'm excited to write a book, I'm excited to find an amazing relationship. You know, like, that's just, it just happens to be one more thing you're excited about in your life. So I don't think we should carry these. I say this because I don't want us to carry these conversations with all this baggage of fear that I'm going to scare someone away. This is just something that you want for yourself. So there's that, firstly. But second, when someone is asking for an amount of time or energy from you that you would feel uncomfortable giving if it wasn't on some kind of exploratory path, then that's the time to mention it to someone. Let's look at different common junctions. Someone's trying to sleep with you, and maybe you don't want to do that if you feel like this is just a bit of fun. And it's not because you have some prudish or puritanical reason for that. You just feel like right now, this is just not where you're at. You want to be intentional about your love life. So you say that to this person. Hey, I want to do this. I want to get intimate with you. I feel like we'd have such a great time doing that, knowing you and me. Like, from the way we've kissed, I'm sure everything else is going to be amazing too.
Yeah.
But I'm being very intentional in my love life, and I don't want to go there with you if we're not open to actually seeing where this goes. And I don't know if you're in that headspace. I'm definitely in that headspace because for me, I'm being intentional about who I give my energy to. But I wanted to say that to you because I don't know if you're in the same place. By the way, it's totally okay if you're not. But I just, it would, you know, I don't want to go into this having not understood where we're both coming from. That's a perfectly reasonable thing to say to someone. Or it might be at a time when you feel like you're giving someone a lot of evenings and weekends, and it's got to that point where you're like, am I shutting myself off to other people right now? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like I am, because I wouldn't be giving this much time and energy to one person if I was still open to seeing other people. So maybe you have that conversation with the person. Hey, I wanted to say this because right now, if people ask me out, I'm not really sure what to say to them. I'm not choosing to see anyone else at the moment because I'm giving this a shot. This feels like really interesting to me, and I have such a great time with you. So I wanted to see where that goes, and, you know, not do anything that could hurt that. But I don't know if you're in the same place. So I felt like I should say that out loud and check, you know, you're thinking the same way. Those conversations are brave, but they command respect, and they also show intentionality, which is when we're playing cool and indifferent, and I want to be the cool person who's like, just go with the flow. That backfires because people don't even know what we want. So they don't even see us through the lens of needing to be intentional with us, because they don't even know that that's what we want. And then it comes as a shock when they go sleep with someone else and you find out about it and you're mega upset. And they're like, what do you mean? You were like totally chill, didn't care, like whatever.
Yeah.
I had no idea you cared this much. So it's actually incumbent on us to show intentionality if we want to be taken seriously.
And I think people are so worried that the other person isn't going to stay with them, isn't going to continue it. You're so fearful, and you want them to think you're this cool person the whole time, that you will, like, I in the past have prolonged, I've stayed in situationships for so long, and people have said, just ask him how he's feeling. And the reason I avoided asking is because I was terrified of what I knew the answer would be. And that was, no, I'm not looking for anything serious. And I couldn't face it. instead of admitting to myself, this is not going anywhere, I'm wasting my time when I really liked people.
There's a section of this book called Ask Scary Questions, because we don't, because we're afraid. We don't want an answer that we're not ready for. And and so we keep going. And then we end up hurting ourselves by continuing down that path. And of course, we then have to really practice cognitive dissonance to stay, because we know on some level, our intuition knows like this person's not in the same place as me, but we quiet that part of ourselves so that we can keep the thing that's making us feel comfortable in the short term, and we can keep that unhatched egg going. When we have a hard conversation, we're smashing the egg to see what's actually there, you know? But for anyone who does get a copy of the book, there's a section called Have Hard Conversations that gives you lots of different examples of how to have exactly the conversations you're talking about, Alexis, in different situations. Right. So people will love that, because it's highly practical if you're wondering how to have those conversations.
And that's what a lot of your clips on social media is very much, well, obviously, you know this, my audience, is very much exact examples of what can be said in certain situations and how you can reply to certain messages and stuff, which I think is really, really helpful.
And that's not designed in any way to be prescriptive. It's designed to be illustrative, so that people, you can make those things your own. You can, language matters. And we have to understand why something works. We can then create our own version of it, but understanding why it works is really important. Yeah. I'll give everyone out there an example, because it can sound kind of abstract, but when me and my wife, Audrey, were early dating, we weren't in an exclusive relationship. There was an ocean between us, and we were in different spaces. Like, I was not being intentional. She was being intentional. And it got to a point where my messages were growing more and more inconsistent. And eventually, like, a couple of weeks would go by and I didn't send anything. And this was like after having had a great time together. No one would deny we had an amazing connection, like all of that. But then I flew home to Los Angeles. She was living in London, and it started to kind of fizzle. There's a very common scenario. And I then did something I'm not proud of, where I sent her a message after a couple of weeks of not speaking and said, I miss you. And now the instinct for a lot of people when they get that message is to be like, oh, they are still thinking of me. Let me respond and tell them I miss them too, and use this as a way to like rebuild the intimacy, because I've been worried for the last 2 weeks that this person doesn't like me anymore. She didn't do that at all. She sent me a message, and remember what I said, language matters. So I want everyone to hear every sentence in this, because every sentence in this text is linguistic gold. She said,
I'm so excited.
She said, hey, I hope you're well. To be honest, when you send this, I'm not really sure what to write back. We haven't been that close for a while. And rightly or wrongly, this message comes off as a bid for attention. Now, if you look at that message from start to finish, language matters. She said, hey, I hope you're well. So that was warmth. So she was still warm Audrey. But then, to be honest, when you send that message, I don't really know what to say. I don't know what to write back, which is her way of saying, this is confusing behavior. And then she went on to say, we haven't been that close for a while now. So she's pointing out the incongruence between what I've been doing in the last few weeks and what I'm saying right now. I'm saying I miss you, but I've barely reached out to you in the last couple of weeks. So there's a disconnect there. And instead of ignoring the disconnect, I'm actually pointing out the disconnect. So she said, I don't know what to say. We haven't been that close for a while now. And rightly or wrongly, which is another beautiful phrase, by the way, everyone out there, if you're ever having a hard conversation, rightly or wrongly is a beautiful phrase, because it removes ego from the equation. You're not calling someone a bad person. You're not outright saying this is what you're doing and I can read your mind and your intentions. You're saying rightly or wrongly. In other words, I might be wrong. Tell me if I've got it all wrong. But rightly or wrongly, this message comes across like a bid for attention. What it feels like, I might be wrong, but what it feels a lot like is that you sending this message is not about your intentionality. It's about you wanting a hit of attention right now.
Yeah. So she's saying, this is how I've interpreted it. Here's your opportunity to clarify.
Exactly. And by the way, I strongly believe if I had suddenly like love bombed Audrey with a bunch of messages at that point and been like, oh my God, you've got it so wrong. I really miss you. I don't think that would have meant much to her, because what she had seen, and let's go back, what she valued is consistency. And what she had seen from me was a total lack of consistency in the way I was communicating. I was not going to make up for a lack of consistency over the last month with what I did that night. And that's really, really important, because I couldn't have just like, you know, if I was a more manipulative person who just wanted to get back in her good graces, I don't believe there's anything I could have done that night to like win her over in a big way. I might have been able to get on the phone with her and have a really lovely phone call, but I know her, and I know she would have, at the end of that phone call, she would have been to herself like, that was a really lovely phone call. I had such a great time talking to him again, but we'll see. I know that's what she would have felt. Now, here I think is a really important part of this story. We didn't like rekindle in a massive way at that point. I got that message and I was like, oh, she's right. I didn't at that point suddenly go, I'm going to try a lot harder. I went, she's right. She wants something different from me right now. We're in different places. I'm going to back off. And she didn't then text me 3 days later because nothing came of it and go, so what are you up to? Because it wasn't a tactic. It was a standard. A tactic is something you do when you're trying to get a result. And if you don't get the result you want, you switch tactics. It was a standard. A standard is what you do when it's who you are. And it was who she was. So it didn't change just because I didn't come running back. It stayed exactly where it was. This is my standard. You're not consistent. You telling me you miss me means nothing to me in the context of you having been inconsistent and not trying. So I'm going to give you the opportunity to try harder. But if you back away, you've just proven my point. You've not given me a reason to try a different tactic. And if people can internalize that, it proves the entire conversation you and I have had, Alexis, that it didn't matter how much of a connection we had or how attracted she may or may not have been. It didn't matter. It was irrelevant. The only thing that was relevant was she valued someone who was intentional, someone who was consistent, and someone who is actually willing to show up in an emotionally available way. And it wasn't just that when she sensed I wasn't those things in that time, that she decided I wasn't worth her energy. It was that I truly believe I actually became less interesting to her. She didn't stay as interested. Mm-hmm. She was like, oh, this felt like it was something. And now actually increasingly, the way he's behaving, I'm actually kind of, this is actually becoming a turnoff, and I'm becoming quite disinterested in this. So I would say it was, if anything, it was taking me more into unattractive territory, because she truly believed in what was important and what she valued. And she backed that up with every part of her being.
That's, I love her already.
I know. She's more she's even more popular than me. I remember as soon as I started introducing her to the world, I very quickly, people were like, let's listen. We want to hear more from Audrey. So,
she sounds like she's got her shit together. I love it.
Yeah, she's great. She's amazing.
I've got one final question that we could hopefully squeeze in. And this, without going in too deep, but this question cropped up quite a few times. But how to overcome a deep fear of being cheated on? It affects any relationship I get into.
Well, firstly, you can't make anyone else do what you want all the time. And you don't need to, because we only need to trust ourselves. Trusting ourselves, when you trust yourself, you don't need to trust other people in the same way. You trust that if someone betrays you, you'll be able to walk away. You trust that if you did walk away, you know how to keep yourself safe, that you have got your back, that, you know, one of the things I'm sure, Alexis, one of the most beautiful things to come out of that time where you were by yourself and you built your life in a way that felt really strong. One of the most beautiful things I'm sure that came out of that was this feeling that you had yourself. Like I've got I can make myself feel safe. And when you can make yourself feel safe, you no longer fear being betrayed in the same way. You don't want to be betrayed, and you know it will hurt if you get betrayed. It could still be immensely heartbreaking for someone you care about to betray you, but you don't carry this existential fear that if someone betrays you, you won't be okay, because you know that you've got you. So a big part of this is learning to trust ourselves and learning to feel safe by ourselves. And that, for so many people, that will rob them of this incessant fear of, I won't be okay if this person betrays me. And then recognize when you're with someone who isn't giving you any reasons to feel scared, and they've done right by you, and they're showing up in the consistent ways we've talked about, notice that this fear of them cheating is part of a pattern of anxious thinking, and that this is where your anxiety goes. Especially if we've been cheated on in the past, it's like that's where it goes. Seeing it as a pattern of anxious thinking instead of a reflection of reality is really, really powerful. And if you look back on your life and you know that this is a consistent thing across multiple people, multiple situations, it's been present in both situations where you haven't been safe and also ones where you have, then you no longer give so much weight to the thought, because it's, again, it's not that you for sure know that someone's not going to cheat on you. You can never have that certainty. It's that you can recognize that this pattern of thinking doesn't have to do with the person. There are certain people who will make it worse. Don't get me wrong. There are people that you shouldn't be with because they're not trustworthy and because they actively make all of your trauma worse. But in other situations, it's not a reflection of the relationship. It's a pattern of thinking that has been a constant through your life. And when you realize it's been a constant, you stop taking your own thoughts so seriously. And that's a good place to be. When you get afraid that someone's going to cheat on you, remind yourself how many times in your life you've had this thought. Remind yourself it's followed you to every relationship, no matter whether it was someone who was deeply untrustworthy or someone who was the complete opposite end of the spectrum. It has followed you always and forever, or since whatever time in your life. And that, therefore, I don't have to give this thought so much respect. I can label it for what it is. This is a pattern of anxious thinking, and it's doing what it always does. And that labeling is really, really important, because if you don't label it for what it is, then all of a sudden you start actually taking that thought seriously again, and you start identifying with the thought.
I'm so happy you said that, because I tell people with that all the time, like, you've got to, like, the whole name it to tame it. Like, it's so important to, like, with any anxious or fearful thought, like, call it out.
Yeah.
And you'll be amazed at how quickly you'll like be like, okay, I'll take it off that pedestal.
And you know what, Alexis? It puts us in a very selfish mode when we're there, where we're no longer thinking about what we want to give to the relationship or how we want to show up for somebody else or the impact we want to make. We're focusing on just constantly feeling unsafe. And if you want to be a generous partner, then you have to show up generously. And I've had friends of mine who their partners will tell them they can't do certain things that are completely innocent things, but they can't go on that trip or they can't do this thing because they're anxious about something. And I really sympathize with that, because that's a really hard thing. When for the partner who's anxious, that's a really hard, hard thing. But I want to tell them it's really sad, because your anxiety is now making you deprive your partner of things that would make them happy and things that would expand their life And if we want to be a generous partner, you know, sometimes we have to say, what would I do if I was trying to make my partner happy? Not what would I do if I was trying to make myself comfortable all the time?
Honestly, thank you so much. I could ask you 1,000 more questions, but thank you so much for your time. I really, really appreciate it. I know my audience would have loved that. I really enjoyed how like free-flowing that conversation was with you. Just to my listeners, definitely buy the book, read his book, Love Life. I'm going to read it. I can't wait. I'm going to go and buy it now. I'm so excited. But honestly, thank you, Matthew.
You're so welcome. Thank you for having me. It's been such a fun conversation. Everyone out there, I'd love for you to get a copy of the book. If you've enjoyed this conversation, I think you will enjoy this book immensely. It is designed to be a co-pilot for anyone who is looking for love, but it's also designed to help people be happier, to be more accepting of themselves, and to find their confidence on the path, not just waiting for it to come at some point in the future. It's called Love Life, How to Raise Your Standards, Find Your Person, and Live Happily No Matter What. And you can get a copy at lovelifebook.com, which is a really great place to get it, because for everyone who gets a copy of the book, when you go there and put in your receipt number, doesn't matter where you get it from, you'll get a ticket to an event I'm doing on May the 4th called Find Your Person, which is a virtual event. So everyone in Australia can do it, but it's going to be we're going to take all of the ideas from the book and we're going to bring them to life in a very real way in your year at that event. So grab a copy and grab one for a friend or anyone you know that will enjoy it too. Know that this book, this message today, this conversation today, a huge part of it is understanding that your past does not have to equal your future. It doesn't matter what's happened so far, and it doesn't matter how long it's been happening for, or how long you've been this way for, or how long you felt like you've been sabotaging for, or how many people you've been with that have betrayed you or cheated on you. Or we can always create a different path going forward if we do new things. A simple philosophy that I live by is you can either wait or you can create. And waiting is anxious thinking. Waiting is fear, and creating is going, you know what, actually there might be a new story around the corner. And I get it. Like I'm someone who at my default is to obsess over things I've said or things I've done wrong or things that I wish I hadn't done. And of course, when you're at a stage in your love life where you want to be with someone and you feel like you still haven't found your person, you beat yourself up for the past. You beat yourself up for what you've done to get yourself into this position. You beat yourself up for leaving it too late. You beat yourself up for that thing you said in a breakup or that led to a breakup because I should never have had that conversation because I came across as needy or insecure or I drove someone away. Mm. We're all capable of that. Everyone does that. We're humans. When I said to you that thing about Audrey and I was like, oh, she's even more popular than I am. My first thought was, I didn't mean to say even more popular, like I was arrogantly talking about how popular I am. I was like, oh, I should have said she's more popular than I am. But why did I say even more popular than I am? I could spend the rest of the day thinking about that comment if I let my anxiety and my anxious thinking patterns win and go, why did I say I should have said it differently? We all do that. But you can wait or you can create. You have far more impact by what you do today than worrying about something you said or did in the past. You could laugh about something you've said, like we are right now, and me saying that and thinking about it, and you can make a story out of it. Or you could just get on the next interview and make a decision about what you're going to do differently next time. That's life. So don't ever let the way you've been or what you've said in the past or what you've done in the past or how long you've left it to do something take away the truth that you are alive, you are breathing, you're here right now, which means you now have the opportunity to create a new story in your life. I don't care what has happened in your life so far. If you're hearing my voice right now, if you're hearing Alexis' voice, you have the ability to go and create a new story right now by doing something different, doing different behaviors, different actions, different ways of thinking than the way you've thought in the past. And I hope you'll get some of those from this new book. So Alexis, thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for your time. That was unbelievable. And yeah, everyone get the book. And I'm also going to be joining that seminar. So I'm very excited for that.
I love it. I can't wait to see you there. Thank you, Alexis. And be well, everybody.
Listener.